is In the Fight, a Section 247 show presentation. Follow us on social media, Twitter and Instagram, at In the Fight Show, on Facebook at facebook.com/In the Fight Show.
Oh my God!
Welcome back to InTheFight.net, the weigh-in, where Brett and I weigh in on the weekend that was in the world of combat sports. I am Michael Lipinski, joined as always by Brett Halpern. A few housekeeping notes coming out of the gate here. Follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at ITF Show. Go support those who support us. Michael's Glass Company, serving the Philadelphia tri-state area since 1978. 215-338-3293. DePaul's Table, 7 East Lancaster Avenue in Ardmore, a modern Italian steakhouse, DePaul'sTable.com for reservations, and TKO Store, TEKOStore.com for all of your merchandise for fighters, for the fans, by fighters, In the Fight Show merch coming soon. Brett, the zombies didn't get you, so that's good.
Yep, that's a good point. I'm alive, survived the weekend, and don't have a crazy Twitter feed like Caitlin Chukagian.
She was hacked.
Well, she didn't acknowledge that right away, and it stayed hacked for a while.
Do you think she just let it go? I didn't even look at it. What was on there?
I can't even describe. You should go look. Just make sure it's not while the kids are around.
Okay, I'll have to check it out. And of course, I was thus making fun of wrestling, where
yes,
zombies showed up. The WWE had fucking zombies eat two of their wrestlers. It's 2021. Zombies.
I think you're just salty because one of the wrestlers looks like you.
And he got hurt in the process. Nonetheless, yeah. Let's talk about some real fighting here. Let's get into UFC 262. You're 3-up, 3-down. You can find this on InTheFight.net. Let's start off with your 3 guys trending up. I don't know. Who's number one?
It probably is that guy, Charles Oliveira. I think he won the UFC Lightweight Championship this weekend.
He did win the UFC Lightweight Championship, and he is trending up. He is your first guy. Let's get into it a little bit. Charles Oliveira.
And new, 11 years, 26 fights later in the promotion, and he finally gets gold around his waist. It's pretty remarkable. I will say, I do wish I knew where the term, his nickname came from, the Bronx, because after the fight, if you quickly went on SportsCenter, they were talking about the fight with Tyron Woodley, and whoever the broadcaster was thought that the nickname had to do with the fact that he was somehow a New Yorker. He's like, you could probably feel that punch from Staten Island, and it has nothing to do with the city of New York or the borough, the Bronx.
Nothing whatsoever. Doesn't even have to do with the United States of America.
No, I guess there's something either Portuguese or Brazilian has to do with the Bronx. I don't know what it is, but you know, when we find out, we'll let you know.
Yeah, we'll take a look at that. Maybe you can check that. Maybe we'll have an answer for you on Thursday by the time we're on Sportinarium Radio. We're live every Thursday, Sportinarium, 5 o'clock in the East, 10 in the UK, anywhere you find the podcast on Friday. Tremendous performance, obviously.
It was a tremendous fight, a tremendous performance. He has, when he came into the organization, he was known as this, you know, uber talented kid who had all the skills possible. But sometimes when the going got tough, you know, he would sort of crack under the pressure. You saw that. I remember watching him after Frankie Edgar had dropped down to featherweight. Frankie Edgar, his first fight was against Jose Aldo, lost a close unanimous decision for the belt. And then his second fight was against Charles Oliveira. And you saw this young kid with all this talent, but he went up against the guy with just that championship medal that just grinded him out. And I think now, fast forward to Saturday night, you know, Charles Oliveira was able to take Chandler's back real quick, but then the going got tough. Chandler cracked him a few times. He was able to maintain his composure, get through the first round, even though on the scorecards, we'll talk about this in a little bit, the scorecards, they scored a 10-8. Two of the judges scored a 10-8 for Chandler, which I didn't see it being a 10-8 for Chandler, but nevertheless. So, you know, he really would have been in trouble had the fight gone on longer. And then, bam, 19 seconds into the second round, you know, he clips Chandler with a very clean left hook. And so he showed not only championship skill, but the championship heart. And I think that was the ingredient that was missing all these years. And as he's grown, as he's matured, he's gotten a lot tougher. And now he is the champ.
He is the champ, and he is a top of your trending up. Trending up number two for your list from UFC 262 is Beneil Dariush. And great name. Sometimes you shouldn't have a microphone in front of everybody. I think we would learn that. But, hey, controversy creates cash.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, actually, he's known as a really nice guy. He just made this very strange comment regarding all those apparently suffering from Marxist ideology. Nevertheless, this was Beneil Dariush's most impressive and most important victory of his career by far. I actually just checked before we started recording. The newest set of UFC rankings came out. In my write-up, I said he would be number 5. Well, I was wrong. He's actually now number 3 in the UFC lightweight division, even past Conor McGregor now. I have a feeling that'll be adjusted in about a month before the Conor McGregor fight, and suddenly they'll do a switcheroo with the rankings. But nevertheless, he's now earned himself a shot. He's going to be fighting the elite of the elite. He's going to be fighting a Gaethje, a Poirier. You know, maybe he fights Michael Chandler. Who knows? But, you know, from now on, Beneil Dariush is in the talks for a title shot or fighting the elite of that weight class. And he did it by dominating one of the central figures of the lightweight division in the last several years, and Tony Ferguson completely shut him out.
Number 3 trending up, Andre Muniz. Not to be confused with Andre Munoz, who I don't even know who he is, but apparently Andre Munoz is a nice guy. Andre Muniz.
Andre Muniz, man. So going into the fight, he fought. He was the featured prelim on ESPN. He fought Ronaldo Jacare Souza, and he claimed that he was the better grappler. Well, it only took him 3.5 minutes, and he completely snapped Jacare's arm. And it was one of the most graphic things that has taken place in the UFC. And then when you heard it, you could hear it, and it sounded like celery snapping. That is going to be forever ingrained in my brain now. So credit to him. I mean, not that he's looking to go out and snap people's arms, but, you know, you literally submitted one of the greatest BJJ practitioners of all time. Looked good doing so. So, you know, I think he's definitely going to start to see himself fighting top guys in the near future. So credit to him.
Oh, when I said I didn't know who he was, I was talking about Andre Munoz, who I just randomly made up. For our fans here who are like, how didn't he know who the guy was in the fight? I knew who the guy was in the fight. I created some dude's name. Bad joke.
I actually knew an Andre Munoz when I went to Wagner, so I didn't know.
I was thinking of what's his name from the Bengals, but not Andre. He's a Hall of Famer.
You were thinking of Anthony Munoz.
Anthony Munoz. There we go. Got my names confused. It happens sometimes.
It's all right.
The goal line stand, all football, all the time, anywhere you find podcasts.
Let's go to the fan show.
What?
At GL Stand Show.
That is correct. Yes. Let's move to your 3 trending down, and we're going to go back to one of the key fights of the night, trending down the first guy here, Tony Ferguson.
Yeah, you know, it's in a way it's sad. So Tony Ferguson has suffered his 3rd straight defeat. This is a guy who had a win streak that spanned nearly 6 years. Prior to losing to Justin Gaethje, the last time that Tony Ferguson had lost, Mike and I had attended that loss. It was in May of 2012 as part of Mike's bachelor party. It was our bachelor gift. We went up to the formerly known as the Brendan Byrne Arena. The
it's where we almost died with the Russians.
No, no, not when we almost, no, that was a Strike Force event.
Oh,
this
okay.
This was Jim Miller against Nate Diaz, UFC on Fox. This was on the undercard of that. That's how long ago it was for Tony Ferguson to lose. And for a long time, he really was the class of the division. And not only was he defeating fighters, you know, they always showed there was a meme of the pictures of the guys during the fights. And it literally looked like each of them took fought like Freddy Krueger because they were all cut up. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, I think the Justin Gaethje fight took a lot out of him. He really, that was a beating that I don't think you recover from. And since then, he has looked old and he has looked slow. And Charles Oliveira completely dominated him. And because Ferguson is an absolute animal, Oliveira had him in an arm bar to which he didn't tap, so he snapped his arm. And then in this fight, Dariush, who is another world-class grappler, had Ferguson in a inside heel hook or reverse heel hook, something of that nature, refused to tap and basically tore everything in his knee and kept going. It's unbelievable. But so you can't sustain those kind of injuries at 37 and keep going, particularly after you sustained all the head trauma you did and, you know, fracturing your orbital bone against Justin Gaethje last year. You know, to me, can he compete against a lower-ranked fighter? Yes. I don't think he is as washed as, say, Donald Cerrone. He can still take a punch, but he clearly is no longer among the elite in the division, and he's never going to get his shot at the Undisputed Championship, even though it had been booked for it so many times. Do you realize this is, I think he's going to be the only ever interim champion to never fight for the Undisputed Championship of his division.
It happens.
I guess you have to fall over, you know, cables, and then there has to be a pandemic, and there's tiramisu. It's a whole big thing.
Yeah, it is a mess, and it's a shame. You know, one of those things. I guess you got to find a way to. I don't know.
The
fight gods are just not on your side, apparently.
No, definitely not, and. You know, look, as I always, it is to me, I think, a great quote, as Rocky said in the first Creed movie, time is undefeated and it is no longer on his side at the age of 37.
It is no longer on his side at 37. It is creeping up there. Number two on your list of trending down, Bellator, the whole organization, who didn't even fight on Saturday night. So explain this to us. I know where you're coming from.
Even the interns.
If you've read it on InTheFight.net, you know where he's coming from. But if you're just listening to this, go ahead.
Well, as we discussed in our preview to this event, you know, one of the avenues that a lot of people were discussing and, you know, we thought of is that with Michael Chandler having only fought once and recently being fighting under the Bellator organization and being perhaps their best homegrown talent, this was an opportunity for Bellator to say, hey, look, Michael Chandler, the UFC lightweight champion. Well, guess what? He got knocked out simply 18 months ago by our champion. You don't have the best lightweight in the world. Well, Michael Chandler isn't the best lightweight in the world. He lost, so Bellator loses the opportunity to actually pick up that momentum and steal some of the shine off of Michael Chandler. And now, not only that, Charles Oliveira has defeated two Bellator welterweight champions, lightweight champions. He first defeated Will Brooks earlier in his career, and then now soundly defeated Michael Chandler in the second round. So while, yes, Bellator has one of the best lightweights in the world, and Patricio Pitbull, or Pitbull number two, as we like to refer to him, because he is the younger brother of the other Pitbull. The argument that he is absolutely number one is not as strong as it could have been. And you can't say, oh, well, he beat the UFC champion, because Michael Chandler is not the UFC champ. So I think, to me, it hurt a really big marketing opportunity for Bellator.
Number three in your trending down, the women's flyweight division.
Yes. So Caitlin Chookagian and her interesting Twitter feed. So Mike, let's just say the Twitter feed is comprised, if you go to her likes, it is comprised primarily of pornographic content of actors of a certain race and their genitalia. That's all I'm gonna get into. But it's pretty funny. So anyways, Caitlin Chookagian, who look is a very good fighter, ranked number two in the division, took on Viviane Araújo and soundly defeated her via unanimous decision. And Araújo, not that she was necessarily going to be the one to take on Valentina Shevchenko and defeat her, but it would have created new, potentially exciting contenders for Valentina. And it really just shows that there's Valentina and everyone else. Actually, it's like there's Valentina, then there's Caitlin Chookagian and Jessica Andrade, and then there's everyone else. So, I mean, honestly, I don't see there being a flyweight title match that is going to be competitive until Valentina retires. So, in that sense, it's going to make the division stale.
It's something we've discussed. Other MMA journalists have discussed. It's a problem right now for the UFC. Let's move on and we'll go over some of the rest of the card. There's a couple of key fights in here, maybe fight of the year candidate. But before we do, check out TKO Store, TEEKO Store.com. New merch coming daily. Right now, they got a new shirt out for Hands of Stone, John Lineker. Cage Talk, which is another MMA podcast that's out there. As more and more of us grow, more and more of us will be on there. Some cool stuff. Check it out. Tell them we sent you. Let's get to the card. Edson Barboza, Shane Burgos, Mystic Fireworks.
Yes, this and by as I correctly predicted, this was going to be the fight of the night, and it absolutely was. This was just right from the get-go. You had Barboza landing leg kicks, Burgos with his tremendous boxing, Barboza actually standing tall and with some great counter punches, as well as his patented spin kicks. This was pure entertainment. These guys were going at it. And then on top of it also had one of the strangest endings I've ever seen in that. So when you land a liver shot, right? It usually takes about a half a second for it to register in the body, and then you see the guys crumple. To me, I think the best example of that was when Bernard Hopkins landed a liver shot knockout to Oscar De La Hoya. And again, it takes about a half second, three quarters of a second to register, and then the guy goes down. So here, Barboza landed a really strong right hook. Burgos appears to be okay, takes two steps forward. And then slowly you see his eyes, not that they rolled back, but they kind of, he had this glazed look. And then he starts moving back. He was in the middle of the cage and he starts moving backwards and then falls down and face plants. And the fight is over. So it was a delayed reaction knockout. I've never seen that before in all my years watching boxing and mixed martial arts, but it happened. It was scary. Burgos was taken to the hospital. He's since released a statement. He's doing okay. Looking forward to his next fight. Look, Burgos is a one of the best stand-up artists in the featherweight division. But again, he just sort of moves forward, doesn't take into account the concept of defense, it seems like. That's where he is at his weakest. And with Edson Barboza, the problem is you literally have to get right in Edson's face. If Edson is able to plant his feet, he has such power in his kicks as well as his punches. He's able to get them off. You have to literally create such pressure and be in his face that he is unable to get comfortable and get set. And that's how you beat Edson Barboza. That's how Justin Gaethje's done it and others, whether it's either grappling or striking. And Burgos instead was like, all right, let's bang and didn't get completely in his face, but just tried to trade punches. You don't want to trade punches with a guy like Edson Barboza. So, unfortunately, Burgos lost. Edson Barboza, I don't know how much of a title contender he is, but I think he's going to end up, I think right now he's at number 11 on with the featherweight rankings. We'll see how he handles some of the top guys in that division. I'm sure because of this win, he's going to end up getting a top guy. So it should be interesting. But a great fight.
How'd you have it scored?
I had it 1-1 going into the third. So I had Barboza winning the first round, Burgos winning the second round.
Moving on to the aforementioned Caitlin Chikugian, she defeats Viviane Araújo by unanimous decision. Your thoughts on the fight, not necessarily the Twitter feed, which I just took a look at.
Yeah. So, look, again, Caitlin Chikugian is a very talented fighter. She fights, she does not have knockout power. She has this point kickboxing style and is like, she's very tall for the division. She uses her length very well. Araújo, I thought, acquitted herself well in the first round and then gassed out. And Caitlin Chikugian came on stronger and stronger. I had the fight 29-28, Chikugian over Araújo. One of the judges actually gave it 30-27 for Chikugian, which, I mean, there was a few outrageous scores in this during this event, because the problem is the Texas commission is one of the shittier ones as relates to combat sports. So that was the issue there. But again, I just think that this really limits what you can do at women's flyweight. I mean, I guess the next challenger is going to be either Joanne Calderwood or Lauren Murphy. But it's like, you know, do I respect these women and their abilities? Yes. But there are levels to this game, like there's levels to anything in life. And none of them can come close to the champion in their division. So it's like, congrats, you're now the number one contender. You're now going to go get the shit beat out of you by Valentina Shevchenko. And I don't want to see anyone get, I mean, you know, it's like having someone go off to the slaughter. It's just not entertaining and something they're going to have to figure out.
Rogério Bonturin defeated Matt Schnell, unanimous decision, 30-27 on two cards, 29-28 on the other, as I guess the featured bout of the main card, you know, the third down. Yeah. Your thoughts on this fight?
Decent fight. So it was fought, actually, it was strange. Because it was somewhat short notice, these are two flyweights who were fighting at bantamweight. And because one of them failed to make the bantamweight limit, it was actually fought at a catchweight of 137.5 pounds. So they were actually fighting 12.5 pounds over what they normally fought at. I agreed with the decision. I thought Bonturin was the better fighter. Saturday night was able to move in and out, did more damage. And, you know, we'll see. I think both guys need to be tested. I don't know if they're quite in the elite of that division. So it'll be interesting to see both guys, whether they could take a next out there. It was very closely contested. Like, I mean, this is not, earlier I'm talking about Valentina Shevchenko and everyone else in the women's flyweight division. Here, you're talking about two guys who, if they were to fight 10 times, it might be 5-5. It was that close.
Real quick, let's go back to the undercard here. Lee defeated Shevchenko via a triangle at 452 in the round number two. The sister Shevchenko.
Yes. Yeah. So Andrea Lee, she is somewhat notable. Unfortunately, her ex-husband or ex-boyfriend is the one who used to be a trainer of hers who used to beat her up and had Nazi, had a swastika as a tattoo, and just a strange story. You know, nevertheless, Andrea Lee from Texas, so I know the crowd was into it, defeated Shevchenko. It was as I suspected. I think Shevchenko, the younger one, she, I think, if she were just to have a kickboxing career, would, you know, be very successful. She doesn't have the grappling prowess that her sister does. So Lee was able to take her down, and then in a scramble, ended up actually in the bottom, but then, you know, locked on a really tight triangle. But then, you know, I think it's one of the cooler submissions when you're able then to hook the arm in and then create this, like, the triangle armbar, as they say. So Perhaps Andrea Lee could grow to become a contender, but again, I mean, she's going to be, I think she's ranked like ninth right now. And, you know, yeah, you could beat Antonina Shevchenko. That doesn't mean you're beating your older sister. It's just not going to happen. Plus, if you fight her, then she's going to be really pissed. And I don't want to see a really pissed Valentina Shevchenko.
Let's talk Jacare real quick. So his arm essentially gets snapped in half. And what's amazing afterwards, he's just like, hey, he gets up. He's fine. You know, it is what it is.
Well, so for those that don't know, if you understand the history of Jacare, so Jacare was once competing in the Mundials, which is the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu World Championships. He was in the open weight finals against Hodger Gracie. Hodger Gracie broke his left arm Saturday night. It was Jacare's right arm that broke. And so when he broke the left arm, Jacare was up on points. So what did he do? He tucked it into his gi and kept going. That's just the make of this guy. He's crazy. I mean, he's just an absolute animal, just like Tony Ferguson is. So yeah, so what happened Saturday night? First off, for the first time, Jacare looked old. His physique did not look the same as it once did. Muniz took this back, but he was high up on the back, so Jacare was able to sort of shake him off. But in doing so, the natural transition is then to go for the arm bar. And in doing so, he actually had Jacare's arm completely trapped and then was able to extend, snap the arm above the elbow. I mean, it's just brutal. I mean, they only showed pictures of the x-ray since they've already done surgery. And I mean, he's got like 9 pins and a rod in his arm now. So it's sad. I think Jacare is going to be cut. I think this is the last you're going to see of him. Frankly, I don't think, unless he needs the money, I don't think he should fight anymore. If you're one of the best grapplers in the world and you're getting your arm broken in under 4 minutes, that's not a good sign.
No, it's not a good sign. Let's get to your final words on UFC 262. Again, live crowd in Houston, Texas. What's your overall thoughts? Was the crowd as good as Jacksonville? I thought Jacksonville's crowd was really hot. And obviously the first one coming out of everything that's going on, your thought on Jacksonville?
I thought it was a pretty hot crowd. It was, look, overall, this was a really good event. There was entertaining. When you have entertaining prelims, you're able to keep the energy up for the crowd, for the main, until they, get to the main card. And, then you had the Burgos Barboza fight. This crowd was amped from the get-go. So, even in the championship fight, I mean, you think about it. Michael Chandler was seconds away from winning, as was in the first round, both Oliveira and Chandler were seconds away from winning. Then in the second round, when you think Chandler has all the momentum, 19 seconds later, it's over and Oliveira is the champ. It was a great back and forth. With the highest of stakes, with guys who are incredibly talented. So the crowd was into it. They were having fun. There was a few fuck Jake Paul chants, even though he wasn't there. I appreciated that. And, it was a fun night. Sometimes I also rate these events by afterwards. I'm always, for the most part, I'm always like amped up afterwards. I'll listen to some post-fight commentary. If I can't fall asleep, it's because like my adrenaline is still going. So I it took me till 4 a.m. to go to sleep. So I give that high marks.
Announced team, everybody tickled your fancy.
Yeah, look, it's interesting. Some people, and I'm not talking about the politics of Joe Rogan and other stuff like that. When Joe Rogan, John Anik, and Daniel Cormier together, it is like having three guys in your living room hanging out who probably know a lot more about the actual sport than you do, but they're just having fun shooting the shit, calling what they see. And the amount of enjoyment that they have and the amount that they enjoy working with each other and then doing what they're doing, to me, it's infectious. And I absolutely love it. You know, Dominic Cruz is excellent. Michael Bisping's excellent. Paul Felder's excellent. But there's something about the Rogan, Cormier, Anik crew. There's laughter. It's, look, you know, at the end of the day, yes, it's a sport. We should take it seriously. These people there are really, you know, even more so than other sports, really putting it all on the line, putting their health on the line. But we're there to be entertained. And I think that that commentary crew does that because they make it an enjoyable experience. They're having fun. Sometimes they're saying crazy shit and laughing at each other. I love it. And then obviously you can see it now that they've installed those cameras by the desk. You see their reactions when the guys are getting knocked out. It's like you see their fandom coming through. And I like that.
It comes off as it comes off as real, which is always entertaining. I think Cormier, the key, he stirs that drink there, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Because he brings it out of Rogan, you know.
Right.
Because all I can say is, I mean, you know, for years we had, you know, the Rogan Goldberg crew, and this is just so much better.
Yeah, it is. And Rogan was always, this isn't a shot at Rogan by any means. He was always professional, which he with a little bit of an attitude to him, but he was always professional, which is what your job is.
Yeah,
that's not to say he's not professional anymore, but he's. He's letting it fly. I'm a baseball guy. It reminds me of any team's radio broadcast, where usually the radio broadcasters have a friendship.
Yeah,
it's a little bit more free flowing, free speech, so to speak. Overall, how do you grade the event?
I give it a B+. Definitely worth the money. Again, really good event.
Before we wrap up, remember, take a look. If you're in the Philadelphia area, the main line, go to DePaul's Steakhouse, 7 East Lancaster Avenue in Ardmore. Seafood, chops, steaks. It's a modern Italian day steakhouse. Happy hour daily, 4:30 to 6:30. Dinner daily, 5 to 9:30. Tell them that we sent you. We have to get into some boxing here to close out the show, as there has been some news. You can't have a three-way dance in boxing, although maybe that would be the way to end this thing. So it was announced that Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua are going to be fighting in August in Saudi Arabia. Judge out of where was he? Dallas, I believe. Texas?
I'm surprised. I would have figured it would have been Nevada, but yeah. I think it was
a judge comes in. It's not so fast, my friends. Tyson Fury, you have to get another. You have to give Deontay Wilder a third fight for some unknown reason. Well, I mean, their fight kept getting pushed back because of the pandemic and injuries and whatnot. But the judge rules in his favor, in Deontay Wilder's favor, throwing this whole thing into just chaos. We should actually get the hired gun to talk about this.
I know. I actually have not yet spoken to him. I'm going to be speaking with him this evening. I can imagine he is going apeshit about this. But I know preliminarily a lot of people, as soon as that ruling came down from the arbitrator, people were saying, oh, well, you know what? So Deontay Wilder won this case. He's going to get a lot of step-aside money, meaning he'll withdraw his desire and claim to fight in this rematch to allow for Fury and Joshua to fight. And Bob Arum, I think either last night or this morning, came out and said, fuck no, we're not paying him step-aside money. And I believe they've already now booked in Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas, which, you know, was a little, not confusing, but surprising, because we discussed how we thought McGregor Poirier might go there. So they've booked Allegiant Stadium for mid-July for Wilder and Fury. And yep. The belief is that Fury will just run through him. Right. And then he's like, yeah, he'll fight Anthony Joshua later in the year.
That's exactly what Bob Arum said. We're not paying Wilder to step aside before. We're just going to get rid of him. And he is right. I mean, the last fight, Fury just dismantled him. This is the problem with boxing, right? And the step away money would have been like, I saw some figure somewhere. it was at minimum $150 million. Because however Dante Wilder's crew was calculating it, they started with the building of the stadium and all that stuff. It was pretty interesting to say, all right, well, you're doing this, you're doing that. This, we need X. So yeah, it makes more sense to just sit there and fight it.
It's interesting. It'll be interesting to see when do they actually go forward with this fight, because you're going to have McGregor Poirier July 10th, right? And so McGregor is of that class of combat fighter where you get a lot of casuals who are going to shell out the $70 or a pay-per-view. So Wilder Fury, though, not as hot as Joshua Fury. You know, sometimes people only want to pay for one pay-per-view in a month. So if it's afterwards, is it going to do as well as McGregor Poirier? Do they try to schedule it the same night, go head to head? Or they, to me, I mean, you can't do it earlier because you need to give time for Fury to adjust to Deontay Wilder. So it'll be interesting to see from a business perspective how the pay-per-view does. It'll still do well.
It'll still do well. It's something to keep an eye on. As we wrap up this program, you mentioned head-to-head. You mentioned Jake Paul a little bit earlier. I think we have to mention it. Triller, it's not MMA. It's not Jake Paul versus MMA now. It's Triller versus Dana White. Dana White went off in the post-UFC 262 scrum, media scrum, about Triller. And essentially, it was an expletive-laden Dana White quote. He tried to avoid it. But the genesis of it is that Triller wanted to pay George St. Pierre to fight Oscar De La Hoya. Dana White just said, yo, leave my guys alone. Go do your thing, whatever it is that it's supposed to be. This thing is starting to get out of control here. This is obviously from the Triller perspective, this is great. This is heat, man. You know, they're doing it absolutely perfectly. Would it be smart for MMA guys just to zip it? And Dana White did try, mind you. He really, really tried not to answer the question. He could have Drew Rosenhaus the thing and said, next question. He didn't. He answered it. And it's a sounding board.
Yeah, I guess, though, here's the thing. You know, they couldn't and they didn't set up the GSP versus Khabib fight. And now when GSP could go collect a payday from Triller, and it's not against a YouTuber, it's against an old Oscar De La Hoya. To me, if GSP goes and gets knocked out against De La Hoya, I don't think it really hurts the sport of MMA. So why are you now, you know, you have control over this fighter contractually, and you're not allowing him to get a payday? That's the only part of it I have an issue with.
I imagine there's more to it than just that. There has to be. I know that there is a large amount of animosity between Dana White and Oscar De La Hoya. So that's part of it. I'm like I said, I'm on the record of this. Enough. You know, you want to, there's nothing that George St. Pierre, other than money, can get from going to fight in a boxing ring. Any MMA guy can get from going to fight in a boxing ring. You want pure combat as a whole? These guys need to come into a mixed martial arts environment. It's not going to happen. We know that. So it is what it is. I'm tired of the Triller antics. You know, okay, go pick on a professional. Go. You want to needle someone? Hey, call up Brock Lesnar. See what happens then.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Although Brock would never just agree to a boxing fight.
No, but he could go in on his own and just, you know, Brock somebody.
Perhaps.
On that note, we're going to wrap up here the program. This has been the weigh-in, our thoughts on the weekend that was in the world of combat sports, MMA, boxing. You notice we didn't talk pro wrestling. We'll get to that later in the week. Thursday night, Sportinarium Radio, sportinarium.com, 5 p.m. East, 10 p.m. in the UK. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at ITF Show. InTheFight.net. I'm Mike. That's Brett. We'll see you later.